Welcome to Talking Facts, what you need to know about family, food, finance, and fitness. This nationally recognized, award-winning podcast is hosted by the University of Kentucky Family and Consumer Sciences Extension Program. Our educators share research knowledge with individuals, families, and communities to improve quality of life.
Hello and welcome to Talking Facts, what you need to know about family, food, finance, and fitness. I am your host, Mindy McCulley, Extension Specialist for Instructional Support with Family and Consumer Sciences Extension at the University of Kentucky. We are housed in the Martin Gatton College of Agriculture, Food, and Environment. Our topic today is engage your brain. As we age, our brain ages too. And if we can keep our brains just a little bit younger, then we will feel more vital and more engaged with our communities. Our guest today are Dr. Elizabeth Rodas, Assistant Professor with the Sanders Brown Center on Aging, and Dr. Amy Kostelic, our Extension Specialist for Adult Development and Aging. Welcome, Elizabeth and Amy.
Hi, thank you.
I am so excited that you are here to talk with me today because I feel my brain aging every day. And I think that this is going to be such a fun conversation. Let's just kick this conversation off with, how does a healthy brain work?
That's a great question. You know, in thinking about a healthy brain, the majority of our brain is water. So water is actually critical, and hydration is critical to make sure that our brain is working as well as it can. So a healthy brain is well hydrated. It also has lots of sleep. While we sleep, our brain actually cleanses itself of toxins and things. So a strong, healthy brain is going to be well rested. It's going to be hydrated and active. The more that we engage in activities that are meaningful, that we enjoy, the better our brains are going to work.
That's kind of an oxymoron too, isn't it? Because it seems like the older I get, the harder it is to sleep.
It is true. Our circadian rhythms and things change as we get older.
When we see brains that are experiencing different diseases like Alzheimer's, what are we seeing those brains going through?
It's a huge question, and we can get into the nitty-gritty, but I'm going to give you a brief overview. With Alzheimer's disease in particular, or there's other types of dementia, there's pathology that sets up in your brain. We have different proteins and different buildup of plaques and tangles and things like that that actually cause damage and harm to the neurons and the cells in your brain. Those neurons and cells lack oxygen, and they actually will continue to die off. And so the pathology will take over. As we have increased pathology in our brain, we have decreased communication and decreased cells that are available to work for our active days and keeping us engaged. As we have Alzheimer's disease or other dementias, the brain will, it depends on the rate of the speed. Some are very fast and some are very slow. So when people have vascular dementia, for example, they may have a vascular event in their brain, such as a mini stroke or other events that might impact the vasculature or the blood network within the brain, causing that area of the brain to not have enough oxygen and blood and nutrients. And then that area dies off. So with vascular dementia, we actually see a stairwise progression of the disease. So people are stable, a vascular event will happen, and their function will kind of drop. And then they'll stabilize, a vascular event will happen, and then again, their functional level will drop again. Whereas Alzheimer's disease, we see a gradual decline as the brain is impacted by the pathology. We have overall shrinkage of the brain as a mass or as a whole. So we have gradual decline in function. We have other types of dementia, such as frontotemporal lobe dementia, and we see specific behavioral changes with that type of dementia. So when we're thinking about dementia and Alzheimer's disease, it's really what is happening specifically at the cellular level regarding the pathology in the brain or the diseases that are impacting the brain and what areas of the brain are impacted.
I love that we have to think about the brain as a communicator, because I know when I don't communicate with those around me in an effective way, then the messages get lost and we don't get things done in a way that is beneficial to my whole family. And that's sort of how the brain works as well. If the messages get lost, then everything fails to function in the way it should, right?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. You know, we think about physical therapy or our physical bodies of moving and exercise and strength, and that's fantastic. Our bodies need to continue to serve us. But if we think about the conductor of our body and our movement, it's really the brain. If we think about our emotions and what we're thinking and our thought process and how we're feeling, it's the brain. If we think about how we're going to decide what to eat for dinner and cook and get those ingredients from the grocery, it's the brain. Our brain is really the driver of everything that we do throughout our life. It's critical to think about making sure that our brain stays as healthy as possible, but also as we get older, planning activities that will specifically enhance our brain health and keep it as functional as possible for as long as possible. Because as those changes might happen, if you do have a disease or pathology in your brain, you'll need additional supports for function over time, which is not always a bad thing. Sometimes we like that social interaction and help, but our goal is to help people stay as strong as possible for as long as possible.
Isn't it important to look at or think about brain health throughout the lifespan?
Absolutely. Throughout the lifespan is critical. My training was actually heavy in pediatrics. I really love neurodevelopment. Even from the moment in utero, what is the mother eating and what medications is that mother taking? How is her rest? All of that impacts the very initial stages of brain development. We can see genetic changes from the moment people are born and the environments that they're born in. I know personally, I have two children that were both born prematurely. One was 3 months early and the other one was 2 months early. So when we think about their brain development from the very get-go, we had to create a supportive environment that was going to allow that brain to really develop fully so that they can have a long-lasting life from the very beginning. But it's also critical to think about how we're nurturing these brains into childhood and into adolescence and into adulthood. What experiences are they having? How can we develop this idea of cognitive reserve across the lifespan? I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with cognitive reserve, but it has to do with the density of neural networks in your brain. And they say that the more enriched and engaged your life experiences are, so the more trips you take or the more challenging your job might be, the more full environment that you have through a sensory input and things like that, the more exercise you have, really creates a dense network in your brain that will offer you resiliency as you age if pathology sets in. So the more dense your brain connections are, the higher cognitive reserve you have, the more pathology with dementia you can withstand. So we build this cognitive reserve across our lifespan through enriched engaging and engagement and environmental supports. And that will actually be neuroprotective towards the end of your life. So this lifespan approach is critical.
And we know that the brain doesn't fully develop until way past adolescence and even into late 20s.
Absolutely.
And so I was going to say, so if it's not fully developed until way past this point of childhood, then does it start declining really, you know, after it finishes developing?
That's a good question. They say that our frontal lobe isn't fully developed until we're 25. Our frontal lobe is what's in charge of executive processing and making really strong decisions, planning, sequencing, the ability to determine if things are really safe or not. So if you think about all of the kids at college now, I say kids, they're not kids, all of the young adults at college, they're still growing and developing specifically in these areas before they reach full maturation. Going to the second part of your question, it is also important to think about this idea of neuroplasticity. Our brain is plastic in that it continually changes and grows. It can modify even until you're in your very last stages of your life. Even if you have advanced pathology, our brain will still grow new cells and new networks. It will change. So even if it fully develops by the time you're 25, that doesn't mean that it starts to degenerate at that point. It will continue to grow and proliferate and change based on the experiences that you have throughout your life.
Great. Okay. So I know that there are pillars of brain health. What are they?
There are six areas that are critical to think about how we get strong enrichment and engagement in our life for a fully healthy brain as much as we can. So thinking about these six areas, one is socialization. When we think about how we engage with other people, what does that do to our brain? When we talk to someone or engage in a social situation, our brain is forced to think in different directions and different ways than what it would naturally if we were by ourselves. We are also getting endorphins and feeding off of other people's emotions through this idea of emotional contagion when we're around other people. And this is very enriching for our brain. Researchers have shown that social engagement can be neuroprotective for our brain. Another idea is sensation. When we think about how our brain perceives the world or the environment around us, if I keep talking about this idea of a supportive environment, how does that information actually get into the brain? It's through our sensory systems. Researchers have now shown that hearing loss is significantly related to the onset of cognitive impairment and dementia. Hearing is a sensation that feeds and fuels our brain for thought. So if you think about just a second ago, I mentioned socialization. Well, if we can't hear people in a social setting, we're not going to get the same feedback and information to our brain as if we could hear them. So if you do have hearing loss as you age, it's really critical that you address that specific area. In addition to this idea of sensation, we have vision and touch, movement, all of these different senses fuel and feed our brain. There's four other areas. The next one is physical activity and engagement. We know that aerobic activity, things that are increasing your heart rate, are going to increase the oxygen and nutrients to our brain. Our goal is 150 minutes per week of moderately active or moderately intense activity. Things like walking and running, bicycling, dancing, anything that's really going to get your heart rate up, you want to shoot for about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. We also want you to do some strength training. There's benefits to the brain by doing resistance training and making sure that your muscles are strong as well. The next area is cognitive challenge or novel cognitive stimulation. We have lots of people that say, you know, I do crossword puzzles every day and I do Sudoku. That's going to keep my brain strong. What that does is create a splinter skill. A splinter skill is something that you become really good at, and then you get really, really good at it the more you do it. So for thinking about crossword puzzles, if you do that over and over, you're going to get really good. Your brain is going to get very strong at doing a crossword puzzle. Are those same skills transferable to other areas of cognitive performance in your life? Maybe, maybe not. When we want to think about cognitive stimulation, we want to think about novelty. So is it new? Maybe try learning a new instrument or doing something that you don't typically do, like writing with your non-dominant hand. Just that activity alone is going to cross the midline of your brain and it's going to make that brain think differently than it usually does. So novel. You also want this idea of goodness of fit. If it's too hard, the brain's going to shut down and kind of say, I'm not going to keep fighting with it. I'm not going to do it. If it's too easy, the brain's going to say, this is too easy. I'm not really in tune to it either. So you want to kind of find these activities that are just enough challenge to push you and keep you interested, but not too easy, not too hard. Kind of like the Goldilocks effect. There are two others. I mentioned one earlier, sleep. Sleep is critical that we're making sure that we are cleansing our brain while we sleep. The brain is able to restore. Learning and new memories are set while we sleep. So it's important that our sleep hygiene is good. If you have any concerns about your sleep, talk to your physician about that so that you can see if there's anything that might be able to modify or increase your ability to sleep. The last area of these six pillars of brain health has to do with diet. When we're thinking about what is a good diet, research has shown that the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet, which is a low sodium, low blood pressure type of diet, the Mediterranean and the DASH diet, when they put it together, they call it the MIND diet. It's critical for brain health. Mediterranean diet has a decent amount of healthy fats like olive oil and avocados, things like that. It also has low processed foods. and high in the leafy greens and nutrients in that, in the vegetables. The low sodium diet, or the DASH diet, as you can assume, also is low processed foods, and you're really decreasing your salt and your sugar intake with that as well. So, six areas, just in summary: socialization, sensory input, physical activity, cognitive challenge, strong sleep, and a healthy diet.
These are all amazing. I can see how they would contribute to just a really full life, not to mention strong brain health.
I've been to a presentation or two of Dr. Otis's, and I remember you sharing kind of a challenge and said, if you can even combine, can create an activity that combines the senses. So maybe you go out gardening and, you know, and you're doing a new container gardening or learning about a new type of vegetable or flower or something. And you've got the combination of some physical activity, nature, you know, where you're smelling and feeling the wind and feeling the dirt and getting dirty and learning about something at the same time, how that can even be more beneficial.
Absolutely. The more that we can get these different areas together and engage throughout our day, the stronger input we're going to have in our brain. There's research that shows that this idea of mindfulness is significantly improving areas of mental health and well-being, and it will actually grow your brain. Mindfulness is this idea of thinking about the sensations in our current moment. It starts out by just thinking about the sound of your breath and thinking about that over and over. But as you progress, you can start to think about, how do things feel in your hand? So if you are in the garden, in the dirt, what does that actually feel like in the dirt and with your hands? Or the sunshine on your cheeks or on your shoulders? What does that feel like? And literally taking a moment of your brain attention to think about the input coming into your body, it will physically grow your brain. We know that people who engage in mindfulness, their brain volume or their weight can significantly increase after 6 to 8 weeks of mindfulness meditation and mindfulness activity. So as we're out engaging in these activities that are working on exercising our body and bringing input to our brain, also paying attention to that in the moment, it's easy for our brain to start thinking about a million different things or, you know, think about what we're going to do next. But the more that our brain is and our attention is focused on the activity and what it feels like to our body, the better it is for our brain.
So, Amy, I know that there is a program that you talked about with the University of Illinois called WITS. Can you share a little bit more about what that program is?
Yeah, we are really excited to have an opportunity at the University of Kentucky and through FCS Cooperative Extension to share WITS Workout, which, like you said, it was created at the University of Illinois through two of their specialists, Molly Hofer and Chelsea Byers. And they created this program that follows what Dr. Otis has been talking about all podcast long, how we can strengthen the six pillars of brain health: the quality of sleep, a healthy diet, regular exercise. They include stress management, social connections, and intellectual challenge. And so they created this program that has different lessons where they bring people together for the social connection piece, and they challenge the group to do these intellectual, almost like games, I would say, but not in a way that they become routine, like Dr. Otis was saying, like, you know, doing a Sudoku puzzle. These are going to look at things like, you know, everyday occurrences or pop culture, or it could be your state or city history. And they challenge people to work together and to work individually to think through answers, build rapport with each other and within the group. And so there's lots of opportunities for these programming lessons where people can come together and have group opportunity to challenge your brain and engage your brain and work on brain health.
It sounds like the little quizzes that my husband occasionally gives me, like where he gives three bars of a song and I have to guess what the song is. That's not a bad idea, right?
Exactly. I mean, at least that's what I think. And that's what WITS Workout is all about, too. Yeah, I'm going to give you the first three lines of a song. Can you finish the chorus, or can you name that tune? You know, those are kind of fun ways to engage your brain that people might not even think about as brain exercise. And yet it's helping people in a fun way and not in a frustrating way. Like Dr. Rodas was saying, you know, sometimes we think, oh, we've got to do that New York Times crossword puzzle. But if it becomes so frustrating, then you're not helping yourself.
That sounds
good. I love the opportunity of these as well, because lots of people ask me, you know, what activities can I get engaged in? What are the resources available? How do I get out and do activities? So the opportunity to do the WITS program through the Extension Office is a fantastic opportunity for older adults to get out and socialize and meet new people who they might not come in contact with. And not only that are you meeting new people, but you're engaging your brain and you're pushing your cellular growth, your brain connections. You're really helping that brain grow and stay active while you're also meeting new people in your community. It's an awesome opportunity.
And it sounds to me that it can be intergenerational. It doesn't just have to be for senior adults. It can be for any age group. And so then you also are making those intergenerational connections as well.
Absolutely. I've participated in a couple of the programs. There's 24 different lessons. And I will say they can be challenging, but lots of laughter, lots of you're puzzled at times. And there were, I remember moments where I thought, oh gosh, I wish somebody younger were here to help us with this one. Or I wish someone older were here because they would for sure know this answer. So I think it's an awesome opportunity for intergenerational brain engagement too. And that's what we were saying earlier. You know, brain health is something we need to think about throughout the or across the lifespan, not just after we turn 65.
Sounds great. Dr. Rodas and Amy, thank you so much for taking the time to share with me today. I know that this is fascinating for me, and I hope it is for our listeners as well. I know that there's a study that is available, and if you want to take a few moments just to share about that before we wrap up.
Thank you. Absolutely. We have a study that combines these six areas for caregivers of people who are caring for someone with dementia, who is living in the home environment in the or the community. So if you are caring for someone, we want to equip you with the skills and the knowledge and the strategies to create these six pillars of brain health for the person that you're caring for, as well as applying it to your own life and activities and things like that. So our intervention, it's a clinical trial. It's funded by the NIH. It's an 8-week, one time a week telehealth intervention. We're going to connect you with an interventionist over telehealth or Zoom. You get to meet at a convenient time that works for both you and the interventionist. And we offer you training for caregiver tips and techniques. I had one person call it caregiver hacks. But it's really how can we create an environment that's supportive for the person with cognitive impairment and memory loss through these different areas of sensation and behavior modification, really focused on an enriched environment for improved livelihood and caregiving skills as well.
Thank you both for your time today. And I will share links in the show notes so people can access the information or can access the study. Thank you again. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talking Facts, and we are available on all major podcast providers.
Thank you for listening to Talking Facts. We deliver programs focusing on nutrition, health, resource management, family development, and civic engagement. If you enjoyed today's podcast, have a question or a show topic idea, leave a like and a comment on Facebook at UKFCSEXT or send us an email at UKFCSEXT@uky.edu. Visit us online at fcs.uky.edu to learn more about the University of Kentucky Family and Consumer Sciences Extension Program, or contact your local extension agent for Family and Consumer Sciences. We build strong families. We build Kentucky. It starts with us.